Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. And I'm really happy to be here and present to another really interesting and unique and intriguing guest. Her name is Franya Shelley Greeland. She is an animal behaviorist. And I've actually worked with her before with the dog that I had who had experienced PTSD from falling down a flight of stairs. She's amazing. I know other people that have worked with her as well, with cats and dogs and all that stuff. That's her specialty. And she's definitely an advocate for animals. And she can actually help to alter and change behavior. What we're going to talk about in this particular episode is we're going to talk about what it's like to be a brand new pet owner. Someone, let's say, that has never owned a pet. I know someone in my neighborhood who's a pretty prominent woman, and she recently got her first dog. And I noticed, having had my own dog who was pathologically obedient, I noticed that her dog had absolutely no training. Fortunately, this is a little tiny little teacup Yorkie. I mean, cute as a button. I asked this friend of mine, well, does she know any commands? And she's like, no. I said, has she learned the command sit? No, she hasn't. That could be a problem. I believe that if a dog is small, it's not as important as it is to have no training as it is if a dog is big. But, Franya, tell us what the implications of not training your dog or not having any knowledge of how to train a dog. I'm not talking just about housebreaking. I'm talking about basic manners around people, socialization.
First of all, thank you, Toni. It's really great to be able to talk to you again. And you bring up so many interesting things in your comments. So I'm going to see if I can kind of take them one at a time there. So when we talk about getting a pet, we have a lot of ideas of what we think that means, right? So we've got this image in our head. Maybe it's based on a pet we had as a child, which, P.S., we probably did not do most of the caretaking for because it was a family pet. So a lot of that was happening with parents or in a group situation, or comes from movies or media or something. We do know that a lot of the time something will be popular. I'm dating myself, but if I say to you Cheers, we can all think of that little Jack Russell Terrier who, P.S., was not very well suited for a pet, being an inside apartment dog pet, because it's a sporting dog and working dog and needs all kinds of exercise. When we're talking about that, we don't really necessarily, I think a lot of us are prepared for the sheer amount of work having a pet is. This is an animal that lives with you. They are domesticated, but that does not mean that they know the rules of living with humans, which is what we're talking about when we talk about training, right? Because dogs bark and dogs jump and dogs mark and dogs do all kinds of things that are natural behavior for dogs, but are really not something that we want when we live with them. So jumping, greeting, natural greeting behavior, but we don't like that. So, and for good reason, not excusing that. So for a lot of these things that we're thinking about with dogs, just with their behavior, that's going to take some understanding. The other thing too is dogs have needs. They need to go for a walk. It's kind of interesting when you talk to people and we talk about house training and you mention that, you said, well, this isn't what I'm talking about. But I wonder if we really appreciate the fact that when we get a dog, we've got to take it out 3 times a day, 4 times a day when it's an adult. And then when it's a puppy, it has to go out every hour. It doesn't come with diapers. They can't control their muscles. So that stuff, the kind of food that they need to eat, the fact that you are their only entertainment, we control and monitor everything that they get to do. They're not free agents. And what that means then is a lot of the times we're not providing for them appropriately, just from a welfare standpoint, from making them emotionally happy, right? Or even being able to give them the things that they need. The other thing, and I think it's so interesting because that about the little dog thing. The little dog thing, I think, is such a disservice because I think you mentioned it and I think you are in such good company. People think little dogs don't need to be trained as much. It's not a problem because they're little.
I know people that have little dogs and don't walk them. They put them out in the yard and that's enough. They don't think that it's even necessary to take them for a walk.
Now, this is something which we're just talking about, basic socialization. If we take an animal, any animal, and we confine it to this little square patch, that's their entire world. And this is an animal whose primary sense is olfactory. They need to smell everything.
Tell the audience why they need to smell.
Dogs process information primarily through their superior senses. For us, we're primates and we're visual. We see, right? Our eyes are right there in the front of our face. So we kind of tend to do this thing with animals, which we call anthropomorphic. And what it means is we really put it, we make it about us. We put a human spin on it. And this is part of the problem we have with interacting with cats or dogs or birds or whatever animal it is that we're sharing our homes with, is we kind of think they're just human dressed up, you know, in a different costume, dog, cat, bird, whatever. And the fact of the matter is this is not how dogs process information. Dogs process information primarily through smell. That is how they see the world. Literally, that's how they're seeing it. They have so many more scent receptors throughout their nose, parts of their brain. I mean, this is really how they're seeing, as it were, is by smelling. Part of the disservice that has happened with the evolution is dogs have co-evolved with us so that they look at us. They know we're visual, so a dog will frequently look at you. And they do that, they've adapted to us this way. Cats vocalize more around us, and they don't vocalize around each other because we do a lot of talking, and we're not very good at reading body language. But the fact of the matter is, when we talk about scent, this is such a necessary way for an animal, a dog that uses scent primarily, to be able to experience their world. And it exercises the brain. It provides information, and it really is, Tony, I've said this to you before, and I say this to you, just the biggest thing you could do for your dog is not to go for a run with it. It's to go for a walk around the block and let the dog smell everything. It's okay. We're worried that when it's smelling, it's noting what other dog was there? What time were they there? What kind of dog is it? Is it a female dog? Is it a male dog? Who else were they with? What do they have for breakfast? I mean, we just cannot get the amount of information because we don't process it that way. And therefore we don't give it a lot of value. It's like as if I were to take you and put a blindfold around you and say, okay, now you go and you tell me what's happening around you.
Right. It's like they have to get their P-mail, I call it. We get our email, they get their P-mail. My grandmother, who was very, very astute naturally about what goes on with animals, she used to say, okay, let me take the dog out and let him sniff every blade of grass. And he would sniff every blade of grass, as most dogs do. Now, about the small dog versus the large dog, it might not be so obvious to people. A large dog needs to be trained to have good manners because they're big and people don't want big dogs jumping on them, no matter how gentle or how friendly. They don't want that. That can be daunting for any stranger to have your dog, you know, Labrador, German Shepherd, Boxer, come and jump on them. It's just like they have to learn right away. I feel that that's rude behavior. And I think it's fairly simple to train them that way. But with the small dogs, I know people that have bought a black dog because black goes with everything. A nice shiny black dog goes with everything they wear. And at the same time, this dog's not getting exercised. The dogs are being fed and let out into the yard and then let back in. And then often they'll stand and just bark at people when they come in the house.
So barking, there's a couple of things I was starting to say about the socialization, where if we don't expose, and this is an issue,
I just want to say one thing about keeping animals this way, because this is a terrible thing that we do with a lot of animals, big or small, with the dogs, where people get the dog and then they think it's a great idea and then they basically ignore it. So maybe the dog gets to go in the yard, maybe the dog gets to, you know, eat, maybe the dog has a dog bed, but no one's paying any attention to this dog. And it's a terrible thing. This is neglect. It is a horrible thing to do to a sentient being. The other part of this is with the socialization. If we don't take dogs out and walk them around the block or take them to new places or expose them to new people, what'll start to happen after a certain period in their lives, and it's not that you can't work with it, it's just much harder to do it later, is the animal develops what's called neophobia. It's afraid of anything new. And that comes along. And so, and they're territorial. We've selected for that domestically, okay, with this domestication. And so somebody comes into the house and the dog's like going to bark like crazy. There's things you can do about that. The easiest thing, and I tell people this, especially if I'm working with a dog that has issues, and meet them on a neutral corner. Walk up to the corner of where you live, because the dog thinks not just that you own the house, but it thinks you own, you know, the street
block
in front of it, right? Yeah, exactly. So I say, go up to the corner, you meet, and you could do this with friends coming over, if your dog, even if you think your dog is friendly with dogs, or with a new person, and then you walk back to the house together. This is a very simple thing to do. Of course, it does help to have a somewhat socialized dog to do this with. Because if you've got a dog that's never been out of the house, and I've worked with dogs like this, this is very traumatic for them. So when they're doing all this barking, they are alert, scared, don't know what's going on, telling you about it. And then we start yelling at them, which doesn't really help the matter at all, because they're like, OMG, then if he's upset, this must really be bad. Let me bark more. So you've got that going on.
Oh, I never thought of it that way. So when you yell at the dog thinks it must really be bad, so it encourages them to be like that more.
Absolutely. You know, you're creating a negative thing around this. And then there were some dogs, if no one ever paid any attention to them, then they're getting attention. Well, then maybe for that particular dog, although that's remote, you know, it could even be a positive thing, because at least someone's paying attention to it. Let me just say, with these smaller dogs, where we think that they don't need to be trained, it is a tremendously horrible pressure to put on this dog, because the dog has no structure. The dog has no direction. The dog is a small dog that is now having to figure this all out by themselves constantly. And it's constantly, maybe it gets yelled at. Maybe that's the only feedback that it ever gets, or scolded. We think that they understand the lecture, right? So we're going to tell them what they're doing wrong. And frequently they get scolded when they stop doing whatever it is that we wanted them to do. We yell at the dog. It stops barking, and then we say, why did you? We start, and the dog, you're actually yelling at them for stopping the thing. So you're punishing them for listening, you know. So what happens with the small dogs frequently is because what you said it, Tony, that the big dog will pull you down the street. The big dog will jump on you and knock you over. The big dog will frighten other people. So they get some kind of training.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not the right kind of training, and it can have other issues with the training that they're getting. If it's not positive and if it's not force-free, then you might have other things. But people are paying some sort of attention to that. With the smaller ones, they're not. And so you're talking about, we talk about welfare. There's also a safety issue. People, when we talk about resource guarding and biting with dogs that are not trained, small dogs, a lot of the times this is tolerated because these dogs are small. And so their bites are not getting the same attention. There's so much literature about what kind of dogs, you know, are bad dogs because they're biting. And the fact of the matter is, the bites that get reported are the bites where the individual ends up needing to go to the hospital or to get medical attention. Little dogs frequently don't inflict those kinds of bites, where they're small. And also, if they have any degree of bite inhibition, you can rate a bite where it's mouthing or for one chomp down, as opposed to you rate it on severity, you rate it on circumstance, and you rate it on different sorts of things. But with the smaller dog, a lot of the time, these bites are not severe enough that anybody's reporting it, and they're tolerating it. But think about the level of aggression and discomfort and fear, and this aggression comes from fear, that reactivity most of the time. It's either defensive or fearful. So that the level where this little dog has to be in its head to do this kind of biting. So we see a lot of that happening with them, a lot of issues with socialization, and a lot of people making excuses and shushing it and just not minding it. And some of them can be so stressed, and you can get to such a level that they can't be handled at all because they turn into these little rage machines, you know, and it's not their fault.
See, I have to tell you that I have been bitten by a small dog once. I was sitting for this dog, and the owners had gone away, and he was staying at my place. And my dog, which was a big dog, is so well behaved. You know how she was. You met my dog, Lillian. She was pathologically obedient. Okay, I'll say it like that. But this little dog, it was a Japanese chin. It was a tiny little thing. Looks, you know, those dogs, they look like they have a thyroid condition with the weird eyes, you know. The dog suddenly realized that it wasn't really in its own home and that where were the owners. And this dog actually bit me right in the face. And I got to tell you, it was a bite. It didn't kill me, but it felt like I was being punched with a fist. You know, it bruised, it bled.
This can happen. I worked with I'm trying to recall the breed, and I always get Maltese and Havanese like mixed up there, but they're adorable little dogs. And these adorable little dogs frequently have these incredibly beautiful hairdos, very finely coiffed, right? They're the precise scissoring that has to go around the face. And they brought me in because the dog was biting people. And I came in, this just so much the behavior will inform you of when you see that. And I see what's going on with this little dog, the way he, and I'm listening to the history, I'm hearing about talking, and I see this exquisite haircut, and I more and more questions more and more do a little kind of behavioral test, and I said, how does this dog feel about being groomed? Oh, he hates the groomer. He just really, this, we've grown to this groomer, how long has this been going on? And kind of comes together that this is really something that pretty much is probably happening because of the way this animal is being handled while it's being groomed. They're small. And you see this in veterinarians too. They get over-restrained. They're grabbed. And I know they've worked very closely with groomers. One of the things that they do, they hold that muzzle very closely, okay? And some of them hold it way wrong because it's a safety issue. They've got these very sharp scissors, and they want to cut around the eyes, and they want to cut the fringe, the top of the head, and the ears. And what they don't want to do is hurt the animal, injure them, but they're hurting them by the way they're holding them. And what is ending up happening now is the dog is being hurt and it can't move. So it doesn't want anybody putting their hands next to it. And then we can compound that by how we're holding them when we are working with them at the veterinarian or other people are handling them. Start to watch YouTube videos if you really start looking at what we're doing with animals the wrong way, and it just will ruin them for you because we see the kind of things that we're doing. I mean, to these animals, we know National Bite Prevention Week is coming up in April, which every day should be, but we know from the stats that most of the biting that's being done by dogs is biting that's being done by own dogs in the family. And it's being done with children. And it's being done mostly with boys. And it's being done with boys mostly under eight who, there was one study that talked about risky behavior. In other words, they just do all the wrong things around the dog, and the dog suffers, and then eventually it snaps.
Yeah.
And what can happen, and I don't know what happened with your dog.
It wasn't my dog. It wasn't my dog that bit me.
The dog you're describing, the little dog that bit you. So what can happen sometimes, and this is also a problem when we don't train and we don't respond and we don't pay attention to our dogs and give them that structure and give them the confidence that comes with training and knowing their place in the world and what the rules are, is we don't pay attention to the thing, the behaviors, the distance increasing, their body language, the distance increasing behaviors that all animals, including us, employ when we don't like something, when we'd like it to stop. And they just ignore it. We just push. And what can happen, there's actually, there's one, a term, canine ladder of aggression. And I actually have an article on that one on my website. But this kind of a thing, if we skip it, if we skip the paying attention to what the animal is telling us, they are going to skip the ladders because it's not working. That's why we say, you never train out a growl.
Never train out a growl.
You never stop a dog from growling.
It's interesting because when this dog bit me, my dog was laying next to him, next to Fuji, and my dog, who's a big dog, she got that low growl. And I said, this is going to be a problem. So I don't know if this dog can stay here. And what I decided to do, because it was way before I met you, is I decided to take Fuji back to where he lives, which is up the block, and let him stay there overnight. And then I would go in and I'd feed Fuji and hang out, walk him, and then bring him back to his own turf.
I would have to know more about it, but I would say that certainly if you have any kind of a conflict over territory or resource guarding or any kind of reactivity with these animals, separating them, it's never necessarily a bad thing.
Fuji's long gone and dead. He's not even here to defend himself against what we're saying. We're talking about him. He's going to say, but you didn't tell me that they were going to come back, my parents. He didn't know that they were coming back. My feeling was that he might have sensed he might be staying with me forever.
He was obviously triggered by something. I don't know if Fuji really had that much of a thought process for it. I don't know. We don't really know what they're thinking. We don't know what anybody's thinking, right? We can never infer a motivation or a goal for anyone, and certainly not for another species. But we can make very informed estimates of that and thoughts about that, because when there's biting is usually happening as a protective measure. The animal is feeling defensive. The animal is feeling threatened. The animal is really wants whatever it is to stop. Now, when people say it came out of blue, I didn't see it, there's two things. Either we're not paying attention to what is going on and we're really creating a situation for them that they perceive as threatening and need to defend themselves in. And it's the highest level of defense for a dog to bite. I mean, they really have to feel that they are in a bad place. So if the dog is so extremely fearful that it has to bite, then what we're getting then is we're getting this very, very extreme reaction. And this, to go back to training with small dogs or with any dog that's biting, it really is any size dog. When the animal is that fearful, how then do you take that animal and say, all right, there's a different way. There's a different way that you can respond. This is such an important thing to do, because what's starting to happen, we all have it. We all have these neural pathways in our brain. It's going the same way. It only knows one set of responses because that's the world that it's living in, this very highly fearful, very reactive world that we've created for it. So either by what we're doing that's threatening, or the environment that's threatening, or lack of socialization, the beautiful thing about training, the beautiful thing about positive training, is that what we can do is we can start to work with animals where we can start to really give them a structure that includes not just sit, don't walk across the street, and, you know, walk next to me, and, you know, that kind of thing. But because it's positive and because there is this interaction that we're paying attention to them in a meaningful way and we're rewarding them, right, with praise, with treats, with games, because we all need someone to say thank you to us. There's the police out there. They're going to tell you that, you know, the happy police, that you shouldn't, you know, be rewarding the animal when you're training them. We all need that thank you. We all work for reinforcement. So it's kind of a fictitious thing. Behavior will repeat if it's rewarded and tends not to the other way around. And so when we start to work with these animals, we start to really get all the, we get endorphins going, we get new neural pathways opening up, we get different, we can teach animals that are so reactive, we can, you can work with them so you can teach them to take deep breaths. You can work with them so when they see these triggers that normally were so scary, we can desensitize them to things that they were scared of before. And we can start like this little path on some kind of a socialization, and we can start it really with this really basic stuff of training, of teaching our animals, sit, good sit, here's a cookie. They can sit before they get their food. They can sit when they get to the corner. They can sit before and let them sniff on a walk so they get to have natural behavior. Every dog with training should know basic things. They should know how to sit. They should come back to you.
When you call them.
Right, when you call them. And they should know how to walk on a leash. And these are all things that are extremely easy to train with the right approach. There's no fairy dust. There's nothing, it's not the, I was just coming up in the elevator and I saw this tiny little dog and out coming up in the elevator with me, and he had one of these, some people like these head halters, which are terrible things. It looks like a halter kind of a thing. It wraps around the dog's muzzle, which is a highly sensitive area.
And when you hold them, it forces them to almost be walk like a pony.
But the difference with that, and that's where it came from, Tony, is it comes from this horse thing. But the difference with a dog as opposed to a horse is the length of the muzzle and where this halter is sitting. You don't see a halter on a horse that's right under their eyes. The halter is all the way down. That it's a noseband. And P.S., the halter on the horse also does work through pressure of discomfort. So there's no question about that, too. That's a whole nother conversation. But what that does is it's not as bad as a prong collar. It's not as bad as certainly not a shock collar, which is just plain abuse, as, but a lot of these other things are too. But it is something that really controls through discomfort. And so when you're doing this kind of stuff, and people like it because they think, oh, you know, I don't have to. And I said something, and you have to be very careful to say something to people about the things they're doing. I kind of try to only tell people who ask and not tell them because people can get defensive. But I knew this person and I said something and he's like, well, he's eating all the food on the street. So there's different ways to work with that, though. And I kind of was thinking, all right, but how is that helping? A lot of the times when we have that sidewalk surfing, I call it, it's because the animals haven't been trained to walk on a leash to check in with us. We're not paying attention to them. We're not letting them sniff, kind of a thing. There's certainly ways to work with that, but there are no magic things that are going to train it. We train our dogs. Devices don't train our dogs. And if we're using these as training devices, then they should work, and then we should be able to take them off them.
Yeah, I noticed that. I know my dog moved to a different neighborhood, and sometimes she'd find things that she didn't find in the other neighborhood. I remember walking her, and she picked up something that just must have been so, smelled so good, and I looked, and it was like a chicken bone. People were driving by the street, and what I did is I pulled her to me, and I pried her mouth open. She never would press down, and I put my hand in her mouth, and people were like horrified. They thought I was going to be killed, and I took delicious food out of her mouth. I told her, no, no, that's not good. I just think that some dogs are just different.
Well, she was also a well-trained dog. And this is the other thing, and thank you for saying that, because when I was giving you the list of the things the dog should learn, and I'm leaving things out, I am sure. Off is another thing your dog needs to learn. If the dog picks up something on the street, you need to be able to say off, and they need to be able then to do it. Leave it, and with recalls, with comebacks, this, a lot of this fails because the dog gets punished by listening. If you tell him off and he didn't get the treat that he wanted, you tell him come, and they have to come from the playground or from the yard. And so one of the ways to really work with that when you're training it is often take it. You know, come back, and when you're doing the training exercise, you have the dog return to you in the playground or in the backyard. And then as soon as they come back, you say, good dog, go play. You release them. So you reward it. There is one training exercise that I love, and Ian Dunbar, who is a veterinarian and has a PhD in animal behavior, and he's one of the best behaviorists in terms of training. He's like the founder of puppy dog training, because when Dunbar started working back in the 90s and said, okay, I want to train my puppy, the feeling then was we waited till dogs got older before we started training them because they were too young.
Because it's become a situation that's more, I'd say, urgent when they get older.
Yeah. But they also felt that the dog was, that they weren't developed enough to understand training.
It's contrary to what would be most appropriate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he said, what are you talking about? These are adolescents. Of course they can learn. And he started serious puppy training. And it was just really kind of revolutionary at the time to do it. And gosh, I wish things were around as the media was as big as it was now for, you know, he would have been the real kind of dog whisperer that we all could have learned from. Yeah, right. Although Paul...
Well, you're the dog whisperer on my show. And, you know, I have to say, I'm so glad you're like a friend of the show, Franya. And we're going to talk again because I'm going to tell the audience that you actually have a book called Cats and Dogs, or is it Dogs and Cats?
My book is called Cats and Dogs, which is the short title of it, but the actual full, which you can find it that way. But the full title is Cats and Dogs, Living With and Looking At Companion Animals from Their Point of View.
From their point of view. And so what I'm going to say, we have to close now, we have to wrap it up, but this, I'm really glad that you came on. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some other things, and we'll have you back to discuss those things. This interview is being recorded on March 19th, 2020. We'll have you back to talk about what's going on right now on the planet and our pet's place in what we're going through right now. I wish I had my dog right here right now so I'd have someone to cuddle with me as I'm sequestered in my apartment. It's actually, you know, the thing that we have to do right now because we're trying to protect each other from each other and the invisible enemy. Thank you, Franya, for coming on. Thank you so much.
Tony, let me just say really quickly, if I might, that in addition to the book, I have a website, and I didn't get to say more about the Often Take It, which is one of the best exercises you can do for your dog for resource guarding, impulse control, which is one of Dunbar's big gems. But I have, on my website, I have tons of articles. So my website is animalsbehaving.com, animals with an S, behaving.com, one word. And great articles, free for the reading resource. There's a lot of science there. There's a lot of how-to. I have videos on there. We all got the time now. And if you want, you can certainly go on there and look and take advantage of that stuff because absolutely no cost, totally just free for the looking, free for the reading, animalsbehaving.com.
Animalsbehaving.com. And during this time that we're all kind of sequestered, most of us are kind of sequestered in our homes, I think that would be a good thing to do. There's nothing more soothing than watching animal videos. There's something about it that kind of warms the cockles of your heart, as they say. And I thank you, Franya. We'll have you back on because I always enjoy all the knowledge you have. Franya Shelley Greeland has a plethora of information about animals. So go to animalsbehaving.com and learn more. And thanks for coming on, Franya. Be well, be safe. And until next time, until we meet again, Franya, we're going to do this again because I know you have more stuff to share. And I'll say to the audience, thank you so much for coming to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I'm always very grateful when you come to this show. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you. And be safe, be well, everybody. Talk to you next time on Energy Stoners Cafe. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.